That's our newest one, Sherry Kagi, So I Can Tell. 15 minutes after the hour, quarter past 8 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone up in the Lake Region of East Dakota. I'm Jim Park. We're Broken Road Radio, and Dr. Don Clark has just popped up to talk to us. Don Clark with Creation Moments, member of the board there, and a biochemist in his own right. In fact, the only scientist we have on staff here at Broken Road Radio. Joins us every Tuesday morning from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, good morning. Happy Tuesday to you.
Well, good morning, Jim, and happy Tuesday to you. I hear that you had some weather.
Yeah. Sunday night, straight line wind, 60 to 80 miles an hour, came through this whole area of north central Minnesota and took down a lot of trees. I've seen pictures of a lot of damage locally, although our property here had none. We had lost a couple planters and stuff that blew over. But in David's case, trees came down and matters of getting power reconnected and internet reconnected, and he's still fighting the fight. So no David today, but yeah, it was kind of a wild ride on Sunday evening. But you guys have had your share of nasty weather. You've had tornadoes down there, torrential rains. Been a little unusual this spring, huh?
Well, it very much has. I mean, things have settled down now, and now we have our usual heat in bright and sunny days, which makes it hard for working outside. But we had tornadoes. We had tornadoes up in Van, which is about 6 to 7 miles from us, came right through town. And of course, that was on not only the national news, but the international news. Mm-hmm. Took out one of the schools there. Fortunately, the kids were off of school, mm-hmm. but and many, many houses, and completely wiped out several houses, and a lot of people had damage. We had a lot of winds and a lot of rain at the time, but we did not have any damage to our property.
Now, Garden Valley, about 80, 90 miles east of Dallas, and I guess slightly north as well, too, so you get an idea, kind of north-central Texas. And, of course, Don, a budding agriculturist, is developing agriculturist-type skills now, because he'll go out every morning and look at the sky and kind of sniff the air and say, oh, no, there's a storm coming, and then he will throw himself over his grapes in his vineyard so that no damage will occur. And
it's a constant battle between the weather and the varmints and fungus and diseases.
This has got to be a change for you. This is like harkening back to the frontier times in this country, when people are out there alone fighting all the elements and trying to make a living for themselves. Imagine if you were dependent for your food supply on those grapes. I mean, what pressure would you feel? Because there ain't nothing else.
Yes. It'd be tough. Fortunately, although we had a lot of rain, almost continuous rain for a long period of time, and the grapes were sitting in water for a long period of time, other than losing some of the young vines that we had just planted this year, the other vine seems to be doing quite well now with the sun and the heat. And at least one of our fields is going to produce, I think, twice as much as it's ever had. Okay. So that's a good thing. Well,
the picture has to be brightening, because, of course, in the fall now, when in old farming days, people would be canning stuff. Their gardens would have produced. They would be picking tomatoes and beans and all that stuff and canning them up. That would be the woman's work in the kitchen. There would be water boiling and canning jars and all that. In Don's case, they're filling wine bottles and putting those away for the winter.
Yeah. Well, the process, that's a little early, because you've got to, obviously, you've got to ferment the grape juice, which doesn't take all that long. I mean, it's a 1 to 2 week process. And then you start racking and then kind of aging in your tanks. Mm-hmm. And then you actually, with the whites, you actually start bottling, let's say, in April.
Now, of course, that would be Mrs. Dr. Don's job, right?
The whole family gets involved with that.
Oh, okay.
This is a family affair.
It's not really like the farm at all, then, is it?
Well, it's kind of like the farm. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay. You know, there's, but everybody gets involved with all the activities, so mm-hmm. it's not something. It just takes a lot of hands to do all the work.
Yeah, and it does. I know.
Of course, you've got labeling of the bottles and mm-hmm. putting the capsules on and all this other stuff. So
you got regulations to go by. You got to take scientific measurements and notes. So it's all pretty precise. I know. That's what. Yeah, I'm learning from you every week. We talk about the wine business down there.
Mm. Yes, actually, we're going to bottle some wine today that we made last year.
Mm-hmm.
So our Moscat, we're making a Moscato, a sweet white table wine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually turning out quite nice. And so, yeah, we should be able to sell it in a couple of months or so.
After well, you've we already, get already won bubbles. One gold medal for your wines. Maybe there's a second one in the future here, huh? You have quite a reputation locally amongst Texas vintners.
Well, hopefully. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the goal. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe my chemistry background is finally paying off, but we'll see. I mean,
after all
making
these years,
the wine is one thing. Selling it is quite a different story.
Yeah, I know. That's another matter entirely. Well, speaking of science and chemistry, and all the sciences have gathered around a story here about a new mass extinction that has been discovered. This is a story on Live Science, and this is from about 4 or 5 days ago. And it says, a little-known mass extinction may have killed up to about 80% of all vertebrates on land about 260 million years ago, that according to researchers. Now, the article goes on to talk about five, and this would be then the sixth mass extinction in history. How are those things substantiated, Don?
Well, it's like trying to find a big graveyard of fossils or, you know, other evidence of creatures that don't exist today, basically, and say, aha, you know, here's a species we don't have today. So obviously, it had to die off in the past, but it's just not one isolated type of animal. It's usually, these are graveyards of fossils.
Meaning and, layers of fossils. Well, of course, that old, you wouldn't expect bones, would you? Just fossils.
You shouldn't expect bones, but mm-hmm. of course, you know, as we've talked about in previous episodes, I mean, previous discussions here, we do find dinosaur bones mm-hmm. in the Hell's Creek Formation, for example, and other places here in the United States and around the world. You do have dinosaur bones. I mean, mm-hmm. So which they claim to be, you know, this old, or at least 50, 65 million years old. But for the most part, these are going to be fossils. That is rock, mineralized bones, where the bone material itself has pretty much disappeared. Mm-hmm. But then you have fossils. But so these five different events, kind of round the world, if you will, or six events. You know, they happen in layers of rock. And so the first question that you have to ask yourself, well, you know, how did these layers form in the first place? And then maybe that can tell us something about these findings. Now, in this particular case, they're attributing the mass extinction to volcanism or a lot of volcanic activity during our past history, for example. And creationists don't disclaim that there was a lot of volcanic activity in the past. And matter of fact, that's absolutely necessary for conditions that would lead up to ice age, as we had talked about in previous episodes or previous programs. So the question is, where did the volcanism come from? And the question is, where did these layers come from? And A very satisfying answer to both of those questions it happens to be, of course, the Great Flood. Now, it wasn't Noah's flood. He just happened to experience the flood. But it was actually God's judgment on the earth.
Well, we're talking about event that we know as Noah's flood or the Great Flood. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. A worldwide event. Now, of course, there's many people who say, well, you know, there have been floods before on Earth, but they haven't been global. But, of course, we're talking about a global flood, a global catastrophe around the Earth. And a global flood would do a number of things. One is, of course, it's going to kill off all of the land creatures at the time. And hence, God tells, you know, Noah to bring at least two of every kind of animal onto the ark. And in some cases, seven, because those are the animals that are going to be sacrificed after the flood and after Noah comes off the ark as offerings and thanks to God. But the global flood also triggers another event, which we've talked about before, which is plate tectonics. That is, there was before the flood, the Earth was the landmass, at least on the Earth, was one giant landmass, which scientists call, you know, today Pangaea. And this landmass then breaks up, and ultimately breaks up into the continents that we have today. And the only disagreement with ancient geologists, for example, those that long-age geologists and the creationist geologist, is, of course, the time frame and how long it takes for these events to take place.
Well, how would we explain five separate mass extinctions, however? And these are extinctions where they claim that anywhere from 50 to 95% of all the species on the planet were annihilated. Now, I'm not sure how they knew how many species there were or how to figure a percentage there. They could say a whole bunch of them were annihilated, but how they could, and of course, they give a rather broad spread there, 50 to 95%. But do we find those at different levels, maybe?
I mean, well, in different layers, for example, and going back to the different layers, how do you get different layers? Well, the massive events that were taking place at the flood, not only do you have water all over the earth, but as the water is subsiding and there's deep canyons being formed in the oceans, you also have upliftings of the land. And if you have this plate tectonics going on, you're going to continue to have massive tsunamis that are crashing into the coastal lands. And that bringing all kinds of silt and mud with it would then form these various layers. And, of course, the layers will be striated based on if it's one major tsunami that is causing a layer. They would be these striations would go according to density of the material in it. And we have evidence of this. Same type of thing happening, for example, in a day at Mount St. Helens. When Mount St. Helens erupted, there was a lake, of course, at the top of the mountain, and the lake melted, and as it slid down the mountainside and the side of the mountain blew out, you had not water rushing down, but mud rushing down, and the mud striated itself, and within a day, you had a canyon over 100 feet, deep, being formed from all of this material that was coming off of the mountain in waves. It just didn't all necessarily come down at one time. So if you can imagine this happening globally and imagine multiple tsunamis, I mean, we're talking about, not a 30-foot wave or a 50-foot wave. We might be talking about 800-foot waves crashing into the the ocean into land, which would then reach inland. I mean, we have, for example, the same layers of soil, for example, the different type of layers not only on the coastal east coast of the United States, but they come all the way in, even here to Texas. We have similar layers that are on the east coast. And the only way you can explain that is if you had a major catastrophe and a major wave carrying that material this far inland. And as it's obviously coming inland, it's going to trap animals that are happen to be in its path. And so those animals that are trapped in this cataclysmic event, this multiple cataclysmic event, because as I said, this is not just one major event, but multiple events, then you're going to trap animals with probably each event. Some animals are going to get trapped. I mean, just like humans get trapped when a tsunami hits the Asian coast, for example, and other animals get trapped as well. So I think the five or the six big events or mass extinctions can be explained through different events, post flood events, that happen because of one, a result of the first, a result of the flood, but secondly, the post events following the flood. And as the continents are breaking up, for example, we have tsunamis form just because of an earthquake in the ocean can form a fairly big tsunami. Well, think of having massive earthquakes happening as these plates are moving away from each other. The size, the amount of energy that would be released would be multiple times that of what we see today with these, in quote, relatively little cracks that we have in the Earth's crust. So, I think all of these events and all of these findings can be nicely explained by flood, post-flood events. The plates moving apart. The plates also moving apart would cause a lot of volcanism. A lot of molten rock to be exposed, in the cracks of the earth, and that spewing its materials out would not only cover animals that happen to be in the local area, but also would produce dust and materials that would get up into the upper atmosphere of the earth, stay there for a while. Block the sunlight, which of course brings on another event, which is the ice age. Mm-hmm. So all of these things are kind of tied together, and the starting point for it all, of course, is the global flood.
I'm wondering though whether these researchers have concluded that, and this is over a long period of time now, that there were five or six or even seven mass extinction events. Are these five or six different depths from which these fossils come, or five or six different locations? It sounds to me like there's a whole lot of information, and this is kind of a jury-rigged explanation for piles of fossils found probably in various parts. Now, this particular article, which we will link to, by the way, in our podcast, so you'll be able to read it yourself. It's over at Life Science. This particular area of study was in the what's called the Karoo Basin, covers two-thirds of South Africa. That's where they're getting this information for this presumed new mass extinction. But how do they decide on five and not three or not 12? How do they coordinate that kind of information across decades of research?
Well, of course, the article doesn't say that. And kind of educated guess or lack of educational guess, whatever.
That's an educated guess, I would say. Yeah.
would be that it would be in different types of layers of Earth, Which, of course, they would point to different geological ages.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we would point to it as saying, well, you know, that particular layer was laid down or had a different density than the upper layer, and several layers could have been laid down at one time, mm-hmm. as I explained earlier. But to give them, you know, long ages, of course, they're relating all of this to an evolutionary model, which kind of requires, you know, long ages. And so if they find a bunch of bones or find a bunch of fossils and, you know, in a certain layer, then they, and it's localized, I mean, even if it's, you know, a third of South Africa, for example,
mm-hmm.
Localized in a general sense, in a global sense, then they would probably say, okay, this is one extinction event. Then they go to a different part of the world and see, you know, a kind of similar thing, but in a different layer of mm-hmm. Geological earth, if you will, then they're probably going to call that a different event.
You know, there's another detail here that intrigues me. If establishment science would deny that there was ever a global flood, that is a global event of great magnitude that destroyed, still here they're saying there are five different mass extinctions, each of which destroyed 50-95% of all species on the planet. That sounds like they're describing five separate global events. I mean, is that wrong thinking on my part?
Well, it's a poorly written article. I mean, I think what they're trying to say is obviously you can't have each event at different times causing extinction of 50-80-90%, because you multiply that together, you don't have anything left, mm-hmm. pretty much after these events. So even if it was 50, you know, then 50% of let's say you start off with 100,000 or 100 million. 50% of 100 million is 500. Well,
but of course they would say that after each event life proliferated again, so that new species evolved, and there were again a large number of species that once again were wiped out at some later date. So there's no way to really substantiate this. I don't see that there's evidence here from five different piles of fossils. Of course, I could
well,
be misunderstanding.
Well, no, there is no way of substantiating that, mm-hmm. and it's only. You know, a lot of science, and especially a lot of this type of science, is based on assumptions. And your assumptions, if your starting assumptions are incorrect, in this case, their starting assumption is, okay, we've got these layers were formed over millions and millions of years, and, the Cambrian period started about 500 or a little over 500 million years ago, and then we go up from there, and then we're finding these various fossils in the different layers. So obviously this took place over, you know, a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, I mean, that's the evolutionary model. Rather than saying, well, these layers are a result of, one massive event called the global flood, and there may have been subsequent events after the flood, for example, like the plate tectonics and the continents moving away, which then also caused, like I said, major tsunamis and volcanic activity, which added complexity to the layers that were forming during the time of the flood, but also post-flood with these giant tsunamis, that's going to give you a completely different interpretation of what you're finding. And yes, of course, there's going to be, you know, mass killings of animals during these events, but you're not saying that they're happened over, over a long period of time. At most, the global flood and obviously the flood the water on the earth.
The subsequent consequences, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, it was dry enough for Noah his family to come off the ark after about a year. Obviously, it had to start drying out before that time. And, of course, the Bible describes that there were deep valleys formed to drain the water off the earth. And then the mountains started, the land masses started rising. Quite explainable if you've got, your continents breaking apart. All of that activity, though, so you got a year or less for the water being over the entire earth. And then subsequent events of the plate tectonics of the continents moving apart and probably stabilizing within 500 to maybe, 700 years after that. Mm-hmm. For a period of time, then, after the flood, you would have a very cold period, at least on the land. The water would still be warm for a period of time after the flood. So you would have an ice age, and then following the ice age, with the things that would wrap up the ice age would be massive, massive dust storms as the atmosphere and the moisture in the air would become, quite dry because of the colder, mm-hmm. colder climate, would cause massive, massive dust storms. That's exactly what we find in the geological and biological, history of Earth. We see that the mastodons, for example, are buried in hundreds of feet of dust that apparently came on quite suddenly. Mm-hmm. So, because they're standing up and they've got food in their stomach and they're whole, and you can dig them up and do studies with them and see what they were eating at the time. And the only way to explain that is that there was massive, massive dust storms, at this period.
So scientists in this day and age would then look at those mastodons and say this was a separate mass extinction event. I mean, they could be breaking up the consequences of the flood because of their assumptions into this five or six different mass extinction episodes.
Well, that's right. Mm-hmm. And since, they're saying that the ice age happened millions of years ago, then this extinction happened millions of years ago. Mm-hmm. But, in reality, all of these extinctions that they're talking about in this article, for example, happened probably within that 500 to 700 year period. Mm-hmm. And different events causing, different type of extinctions. Mm-hmm. By this time, of course, Noah and his family is off the ark, mm-hmm. and they have begun to, populate the earth and move into, they move into the Babel, we got the Tower of Babylon, for example, and
that's all within 100 years of the flood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A very short period of time, and people multiply rapidly. God confuses the languages. The people start migrating and filling the earth as they were commanded to do, from the very beginning. Some move north, and some actually make up. They talk about the Neanderthals, for example, in this article. As a type of human. The Neanderthals weren't a type of human. They were humans. And they were just very old humans. They were the patriarchs, some of the patriarchs that had moved, some of Japheth's family, for example, that moved north into the German area where these folks' skeletons were found. Mm-hmm. And so we have, we have evidence of all of these things that fit very, very nicely into the biblical and biblical model, not only starting with the flood, but the migration of people upon the earth over that period of time, a short, relatively short period of time. We're talking, like I said, five 500 to maybe 700 year period when the Earth was in a tremendous amount of upheaval during that time.
Well, let's talk about the young Earth creationist view here for just a second. How old is the Earth?
Well, it's we would say that the
Earth
flood,
and universe.
The flood event was about 4,400 or so years ago, mm-hmm. and the Earth was actually created approximately 6,000 years ago. Now, whether it's 6,000 or 10,000, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be dogmatic about that, but we don't. The young Earth, at least creationists, don't believe that the Earth and the universe, for example, is 13.8 billion years old. We're talking, thousands, not billion, mm-hmm. which is several orders of magnitude different from each other.
So after the Earth was formed, if we look at the timeline, then about a third of the way into the Earth's existence came this great flood, this global catastrophe. And it wiped out a lot of species, land animals and sea animals too, although I guess the sea animals fared somewhat better because the water remained. We can't rule out, can we, mass extinctions prior to the Great Flood, because the Bible doesn't say anything about it, but there could be local events that would have resulted in some of these fossils, couldn't there?
There could have been if there was cataclysmic type events. Mm-hmm.
See today volcanoes and various, in fact, quite a few of them in the past year have gone off in various and sundry places around the Earth. And there are droughts and there are heat waves and there are, and there's cold temperatures. So I'm thinking that localized extinctions could well have happened through that first 2,000 years as well.
Well, except for the... and I would kind of argue against that from this perspective. God created the Earth to be perfect. It was a perfect environment for the living things that he placed on it, and most importantly for man who he placed on it. And he originally placed, of course, Adam and Eve in the garden, which was a very perfect place, had everything to sustain life forever. Was in the garden, and the tree of life was a tree that had certain chemical properties that would have allowed man to live not just 100 years or 120 years, but forever as a physical, spiritual being. Of course, man sins, and then he's kicked out. Adam and Eve are kicked out of the garden, and things aren't as perfect before. And then God, says that you will eat from the sweat of your brow. He causes weeds to grow, and now instead of just going around the garden and kind of raking the leaves and picking the fruit, off the trees, Adam now has to. Work to eat, which was a good thing because now he had the knowledge of good and evil, within him. And so the conditions weren't as good as they were in the garden, but they were still pretty perfect. And it allowed, for examples, the dinosaurs to grow big. Mm-hmm. The reason why the dinosaurs were as big as they were was because amphibians, will keep growing as they age. And so these were pretty old creatures. Not only did man, even during that period of time, live to over 900 years, but the animals were living a long time as well. Mm-hmm. And so
this could be concluded from the perfect climate that had been established. I mean, and that climate taking in all things, food sources and not just the weather and sky conditions, but it wasn't until the flood then, as I understand Genesis, that God reset everything so that
he did.
It's safe to assume was fairly constant and consistent up to the time of the flood.
Right. And he reset everything. I mean, the timeline, the age of man, for mm-hmm. example, was reset. at that point in time. And, you know, you can look at the ages in Genesis and create your own chart, for example, where, you know, there are a lot of folks that are living 900 plus years. Methuselah, of course, living to 969 years. And then after that, the ages rapidly drop to, you know, 500 years, and then to 300 years, and then ultimately to 120 years. Moses lived to be 120 years old. And then after that, we get to the 70 or 80 years. And, of course, mm-hmm. we've got people living today that are 100 or over 100. But, you know, the event that caused the drastic drop in age was the global flood.
Mm-hmm.
And conditions around the earth were much harsher after the flood as they were before the flood.
And not only that, but man was expanding from a very limited gene pool at that point.
Right. Well, he only expanded from a man and a woman at the beginning, but
oh, yeah.
but the genes were perfect.
Mm-hmm.
at that. But after the flood, yes, there were eight, four pair, if you will, of human. There was, of course, Noah and his wife, and then his three kids, and their wives, his three boys and their wives, of which we are all descendants.
Mm-hmm.
So you're either a descendant of Shem, Ham, or Japheth, and or a mixture thereof, because, of course, we've got, in quote, mixed races. I mean, even the terminology race, you know, doesn't really apply too well.
Mm-hmm.
We're all humans. We're all made in the likeness of God. It's just that some of us have different skin colors and tones, and so therefore we like to classify people according to what they look like.
Mm-hmm. Well, I continue to be just impressed with the way that and I want to call it evidence, but just biblical commentary, while not written as scientific evaluations or reports, still contain the data that we can extract to compose a perfectly logical and rational view of how the earth was formed, how life developed, and how it changed with the Great Flood. It doesn't have to have been science. I mean, man has intelligence. We can read non-scientific accounts and extract information from them and reach logical conclusions. And in the case of these five mass extinctions, I'm sure there are a lot of very smart people trying very hard to tie this together, but I think they have some work ahead of them. I think they do.
Oh, for sure.
I think they do.
Talking about, and I don't. You go ahead.
I just was wondering, going to wrap up here. I don't want to keep you too long because you got those grapes to tend to today. Don Clark is a member of the board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website to you. It's creationmoments.com, and you can link to them from our website. You'll discover lots of fascinating resources there: books and DVDs and blogs and whatnot that represent the science that has been put forth to support the young earth creationist position. I think it will impress you, and I just keep emphasizing, because every time people get into debates about this stuff, they start yelling at each other, and their neck veins bulge, and their faces get red, and they start calling each other names. Well, you don't have to do that. There is evidence, and I suggest you contend with it. If you don't buy the young earth creationist position, at least take a look at the evidence and consider it rationally, and not get involved in all the histrionics of these debates. I just do not see debates. I'd rather see discussions. Dr. Don Clark is a champion of discussion. Don, thanks so much for joining us again today. And I think we've learned something.
Well, thank you. thank you for having me on. And it's been a pleasure to spend some time with you.
Okay, well, have a good week. And take care of those grapes. We'll talk to you next Tuesday, okay?
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Don.